This is exactly right.
Hi, I'm Erin Welsh.
And I'm Erin Alman Updike, and we're the hosts of This Podcast Will Kill You on Exactly Right.
We're back with our seventh season, which is bigger and better than ever.
Because guess what? We're now a weekly show.
This season, we're tackling everything from long COVID to norovirus, from the supplement industry to IVF, and so, so much more.
New episodes drop every single Tuesday.
Follow This Podcast Will Kill You wherever you get your podcasts.
Scream really quick.
Oh yeah, ready?
That does feel good.
Yeah, our friend...
That's good.
Our friend Lizzie Cooperman told us that her secret before going on stage and not being nervous is to scream into her hands.
It's really...
That felt good.
Therapeutic. I may have damaged my instrument a little bit, though. This is fucking crazy. Somebody tweeted a picture from the audience of the stage, and the frontispiece looks like Beyonce from the Grammys, doesn't it? Do you think she dressed up like the interior of the Fox Theater on
purpose?
She's
like, make me look.
Give me that Fox look, she said.
Who's here? Who's from Oakland and who's from not Oakland? Cheer! Either way. There you go.
Ask a seven-part question to kick it off. We definitely want you to be yelling the whole time.
Yeah.
So let's see.
Basically.
Who's from San Leandro? Who's from Dublin?
This is Karen's fucking city, can you tell?
Top of the Hill Daily City, anybody?
Not me.
I mean.
They're from places.
Anyway.
Let's go.
We don't. Oh, that was my cousin Stevie. By the way, 110 of my family members are here tonight, so.
I love it. I know, I looked on our guest list and it was like, Kilgareth, 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 yay!
Represent. We represent in the Bay.
I love it.
Lots of people do. Should we do a quick outfit? Yes. Walk it across. Okay. Let's do it.
Look at my, watch my tights.
Yes, yes.
There you go.
Those are cat tights, if you can't see from the balcony.
Little tail in the back.
They're little cats.
No. No. Thank you. No.
I got a pocket dress. Pockets. Pockets. Top of my lungs.
We were having like a conversation backstage of like, what, you know, a serious one, and then she goes like this, and I went, oh, pockets, like
pockets.
Right in the should we sit?
Do you want me to tell you a quick story about this dress?
Yes.
It's gonna be fast. It's gonna be fast.
Always.
I'm not asking you, I'm asking her. We went to the outlet malls in Los Angeles. We went to the Kate Spade store. I walked in. I was like, I have to get... Oh, really quick. Sidebar. Uh-huh. In the middle of the dress story. Oakland, we just want you to know, this is the first night of our tour. We're starting it with you guys. Right here.
Amazing. Amazing.
Crazy.
Crazy.
anyway, I'm at the outlet malls, Kate Spade store. Have to get my tour long dress. Has to be black. That's the rule we made up that we're now stuck in permanently.
It sucks. There's no black dresses, it turns out, that are flattering.
Obsessively buying black dresses. I go in. I see a dress. It's this one on the rack. It fits me. It's my size. It has pockets. I'm like, what the fuck? God is with me. I look at the price tag. It says $219. I was like, hey, listen, I'm going to wear it for what, 50 shows or something like that? So,
are we doing one dress for all the shows?
Yes, the entire run.
Really?
These dresses are going to smell so bad when we're done.
It's true.
Imagine. So, I'm like, I hear my mother's voice in my head. It's a key piece. You're going to be able to wear it over and over
right,
again.
Right, right.
It's worth the money. Yeah. When you spend more, you get more.
Yeah.
So I'm like, all right, Pat. So I take the dress up to the counter, put it on the counter. This is a classic outlet sale, outlet store tale. $79, motherfuckers. Pockets, 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 pockets. I'll never see what his dress.
She, what if she just laughed? She just kept walking.
Walking down Telegraph. Pocket!
$79!
Let's see what else.
Really wearing these the whole thing?
No, we can't. Oh. That's crazy.
We're actually going to wear them all weekend, though. So if you see photos that look like it's here and you're like, I don't remember them doing that, it's because we're not.
Yeah. I'm just going to keep wearing them up and down the coast.
Yeah, but they're still going to smell really bad by Monday, for sure. I mean,
well, and then we can burn them in a pile.
Yay!
Like witches! Oh, we have an exclusive merch announcement.
Oh. Here's why. Merch corner. Oops, the shirts got
corner,
fucked up.
Corner, 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 everybody.
Oops, yeah.
The shirts that are available tonight here at the Fox Theater in Oakland.
We're going to call them exclusive.
We're not calling them mistake shirts.
No.
They're exclusive.
They're exclusive to this weekend. So if you were on the fence, I don't know, are people, then get, I mean, it's weird. Get one.
Look, it doesn't need to have our name on it to make it our shirt. That's the thing.
And listen, it doesn't mean the name of the podcast on the front or anywhere. It doesn't on the shirt.
Why reference the name of the show that the shirt belongs to? When, you know,
and then
the
like,
tour.
Someone will see you in that and like, you'll know they're in the know when they're like, I know what that's from, even though it doesn't say the name of what it is or the name of the host. On it.
Or any name at all, really. It's just some words.
Yeah, it's because we knew you guys were like, you know, everyone else needs our name on it because we're going to forget.
So, exclusive merch tonight only.
Yeah.
And tomorrow night.
And tomorrow.
Also tomorrow, sorry.
Weekend. It's a week exclusive.
It's a weekend, weekend. Shit merch.
Merch.
Merch. Super special merch.
Ooh. Oh, and we got a cake backstage, too.
Oh, my God.
Rachel's Bakery.
Rachel's
Cakes. Okay. Rachel's Cakes in Burlingame sent us. It's on our Instagram now.
It's on Instagram.
It's our tiered cake. Like, we got it backstage.
Someone, we can't talk about it now, Rachel, but here's the thing. Someone brought in what looked like a very large hat box, and we're like,
bomb.
Again, my theory, it's full of moths. We don't want that
yeah,
in here.
It's true.
Someone's going to send us a box of moths. I don't know why that's my fear.
I mean, I would get it.
It's my fear.
It'd be fun. Is it? You did say as it was opening, is it full of moths?
Moths.
Like, you're not kidding.
I don't know what it is, but that's, if you want to get me, and do not fucking do it.
It was one of those boxes that look like when you're waiting for your bag at the bag thing and you see the box and you're like, what the fuck?
Uh-oh.
Like, and you're like, oh, I hope so. Like, and it just keeps going around
sure
and around
a lot
and
of,
like kind of walking away from
sure
it.
There's a lot of tape on that box.
Yeah. But inside.
Turns out.
Nope. It was cute.
Gorgeous, tiered, what's that stuff called?
Fondant
that
cake.
You see them make on all the fancy bakery shows.
And a fondant Karen and Georgia on a couch on top.
With Elvis with a knife trying to kill us. Rachel's a Burlingame.
And a little Mimi, all curled up, all cute.
And
off the side.
On the side. And a little box of cookies.
Yes.
On a cake. Like, here's a
it
cake.
Was so cute.
You eat the cake, and then that's you eating cookies. You're pigs. It's gorgeous. Thank you, Rachel.
No, they're Elvis's cookies.
Oh, I get it. Sorry.
Listen, you guys are here for
listen
things.
Thank you for that. Should we sit down?
Yeah.
Let's sit down.
Are we gonna? Is this
but
correct?
Not all forward. Like, why have a table and then just sit out there?
I know I'm doing
That's
this.
That's weird.
We've never sat on these sides before.
Oh, should we switch it around?
I don't know.
Come
yeah.
on.
It's just, you know,
this is, let's just make it right.
Yeah, there we go.
Oh.
What's it called when you are?
So, okay. We can't hear you and we don't want to know what you're saying.
That's,
so that's not
Karen.
How this works.
That's Karen. I'm Georgia.
Oh, yeah. Hi. Welcome to My Favorite Murder.
Welcome to My Favorite Murder.
I shouldn't have done that. Don't know why I did that.
All right. Welcome to my allergies.
Before we start, I do have one piece of news that might be exciting for everybody that I saw. Somebody tweeted it to us secondhand from another murder I know. You can now on Waze get Dateline's Keith Morrison's voice for your GPS. Did you hear about that?
I saw that. Did you listen?
No, did you?
No, but I want it.
Could you imagine that creep telling you how to get around town? Hilarious.
I love it. It's such a great idea.
I feel like I would prefer Lieutenant Joe Kenda, though. That's who, that would be mine.
Oh, man, really?
Yeah.
He's just so snarky the whole time.
Everything would be like a thing where one time I turned down this street and he's like, okay, Joe, just trying to get to Target.
I bet he says, flip a U-E, you know, instead of make a U-turn.
You can never go back, but turn left and
no, just keep going.
A lot of that kind of hardcore stuff.
Oh, God.
At least it's not Nancy Grace.
She went there. Okay, can I do a new podcast, Corner, Corner, Corner? That I found?
It's not a call and response thing. I don't know what it's so weird.
Is this the time and place to plug a new someone else's podcast? Probably not, right?
Why not?
Okay. Someone on Twitter told me about this, and I immediately downloaded and then have almost finished the entire season.
Sure.
Okay. It's called Stranglers.
Oh, yeah. Yep. I've listened to it.
Did you?
I've listened to the first two. Go ahead.
I'm obsessed with it. Like, the whole time I was on the plane today, like, the whole plane trip, I wasn't stressed out. So I was just listening to a murder thing about really gruesome murders.
Yeah.
And it just made me feel better. So you guys should listen to it.
Do you guys understand that in any way?
No, nobody
gets that. Is that something you relate to?
I feel like I don't have to explain that here.
I listened to that one driving up the 5 the last time I went home, and it started to freak me out.
Dude, it's so scary.
It's really, the Boston Strangler was not fucking around,
nope.
Everybody.
He had issues. And they keep doing this thing where, like, here's the suspect, they think. It's a really cool woman who's hosting it, and I feel like it's kind of like Serial a little bit.
Very official. Very.
It's really good.
She knows what she's doing.
It's produced and shit. I don't even know. And they keep going, maybe it's this suspect, and they tell you all about it, and I'm like, fuck yeah, it's that guy. And then they're like, but this guy. And I'm like, oh shit, it's totally that guy.
Yeah.
Thing, it's like, it's good.
You're just letting them lead you around.
I love it.
Whatever they tell you, you're going to buy.
Tell me everything. All the gross stuff. And I almost, on the plane, was like, oh, I want to look up that crime scene photo. And then I was in the middle seat. So.
It's becoming more and more acceptable every day, I hear.
Don't judge me. Don't judge me and my fucking weird shit.
Oh, one more thing, just really quick. So I went home really quick to Petaluma, California to see the... Oh. My God, what if my whole hometown came to see me at the Fox? I thought you hated me. So I was eating breakfast with my dad, and I said to my dad, hey, do you want me to get you a Murderino baseball hat? And he goes, huh, how much? Yeah. He goes, How about you get me a shirt, but instead of a monogram, it's just got a little dead body on it. I texted her and I was like, guess what we're making next?
Yeah, I'm like, he just wants you to go get him a shirt somewhere else.
Yeah,
he doesn't even want one of yours.
He might just need shirts.
Weirdly, my dad, I saw him last weekend and he pointed to his hat and it was a New York City hat. And he's like, I'm ready for my trip to New York when you go there. And I'm like, oh, because you want to go see my show? He's just like, no, I want to go to New York. So I'm taking my dad to New York.
All right, Marty's coming?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right.
Right.
That's a good way to find out your dad's coming to your show.
Also, they have a whole vintage Ouija board like display at the SFO airport. Do I have to say SFO airport or just say SFO?
You can say whatever you want.
Okay.
It doesn't really matter.
It's like a huge, like a bunch of cabinets of like really fucking old Ouija boards and like the like. It's awesome.
You can't touch them, can you?
No.
Don't touch those.
Oh, I love them.
That's bad luck.
Yeah, that luck doesn't exist.
Oh, that's right. I keep forgetting.
What else?
That kind of sounds rad, actually.
Yeah, that's gorgeous.
That's it. You want to kick it off? Let's get into this thing.
Let's do it.
Is it murder time?
Why do I always remember lyrics to songs, Karen, that I haven't heard for years, but I always forget my email passwords?
I know, right? It's like our brains only want us to retain useless information, but with 1Password, that problem's solved.
1Password is an award-winning password manager that's trusted by families and large-scale companies alike.
If you're tired of being the person that everyone texts for a streaming login, hand that honor to 1Password. They let you share logins with people and with groups.
With 1Password, you can securely switch between any device type or operating system. That means if you're a family or business that uses both Mac and PC, you won't have trouble sharing your private data.
Don't let the name fool you. 1Password does more than just store passwords. It can autofill usernames, payment details, and personal information. And they notify you about potential data breaches.
For business operations, 1Password has a dedicated support team that will integrate its security tools into your existing workflow.
1Password saves everyone time. And we all know that time saved equals money saved. Your accounting department will thank you.
Don't just listen to us. 1Password was named Wirecutter's best password manager. And companies like Salesforce and IBM trust 1Password to secure their most sensitive information. So you can too.
Right now, our listeners get a free 2-week trial at 1Password.com/MFM.
That's 2 free weeks at 1Password.com/MFM.
1Password.com/MFM.
Goodbye.
There's something about the sound of an old-timey cash register that really takes me back.
I know. It sounds like someone is about to hand me an ice cream cone, but it also sounds like we just sold some merch.
That's right. And if you're a Shopify user like us, you know that this sound means you just made a sale.
Shopify has helped millions of businesses sell their products online, but did you know they also offer the same support for brick and mortar stores?
From accepting payments to managing inventory, they have everything you need to sell in person. So give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify.
Shopify POS tracks sales across all your locations. That way, you'll always know what you have in stock and where.
They also provide reliable tech that fits your unique retail needs, like turning a tablet into a credit card reader.
And if you're looking to reach new customers, check out Shopify's marketing tools. They're easy to use, and they integrate with all social media platforms.
With Shopify, we have a powerful partner for managing our sales. And if you're a business owner, you can too.
Do retail right with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period today at shopify.com/murder. And here's the important note, that promo code is all lowercase.
So go to shopify.com/murder and take your retail business to the next level.
That's shopify.com/murder. Again, don't forget, the code is all lowercase.
Goodbye.
Who's first? I'm first.
You're first.
I'm first this week. All right. This is a real fun one. Don't look.
Why do you keep... Literally, this piece of paper has been, anytime it's within 2 feet of me, she snatches it away and goes, don't look.
It's because like, I would look.
I get the point of the podcast. I'm not going to fucking sneak and read it and be like,
Because yes. I would look. I'm amazed I haven't looked at yours yet.
Heard this already.
All right. So, let's talk about two dudes who are total pieces of shit.
Great.
also known as the Speed Freak Killers.
Uh-oh.
Nobody.
We'll see.
Nobody knows about them. Okay.
But the bunch of speed freaks in the audience are like, uh-oh,
is it me?
Shit.
They found out. Arrest this man. And then they come in.
That would actually be an amazing end of this show.
It'd be like a Phil Collins concert. Yes.
You saw me when you were drowning and you did not lend
nobody.
A hand. That's not how it goes.
There was like a kid who drove me here from my hotel who like, and I was telling him about the podcast that I was listening to about Boston Stranglers, and he's like, never heard of them. And I'm like, oh, you're 21 and you don't know about murders.
Yeah.
Anyways, okay.
He's about to.
Speed freak.
Jared, listen up. Was his name Jared?
Lauren Herzog and Wesley Shermantine Jr. were childhood friends. They grew up on the same street, like right by each other in a farming town called Linden, California. You fucked.
They might actually just like the names of towns in California.
Yeah.
Is that what you're doing?
Woohoo. It's like those people who eat, like, they're at a restaurant and someone else is getting sung happy birthday and they have to sing along with it too. And you're like,
to you!
Yeah, they don't know you! Okay, they grew up together. It's 95 miles east of California. They were hunters. They graduated high school in 84 and they gained a reputation as meth users.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, me too. Not in 1984, though. It's believed that Herzog and Shermantine began murdering people when they were around 18 or 19, although it's possible it started earlier than that, even.
Mm-hmm.
So Shermantine would brag to his friends and families about making people disappear, which is what you want in a sibling.
Their family's like, I'm going to take that in the way that I choose to interpret it.
Oh, are you a magician? You can make people disappear?
Finally, you have an interest that we can get into.
Let's see you do it. Do it. Okay, their first known victim was in 1985, a 16-year-old Stockton, California girl named Chevy Wheeler disappeared, it says. She'd been dating 19-year-old Wesley and had ditched school that day to hang out with him. Don't hang out with your 19-year-old boyfriend when you ditch your school, man.
Be cool, stay in school.
Then you'll get to be this. No, we dropped out of college.
We really didn't finish any school at all.
Skin of my teeth. Okay, so then, she had been dating him. She left to hang out with him. Never seen again. Her blood was found in his cabin that he had. But the district attorney didn't think the DNA evidence was definitive. So, nope.
Well, he's the one that would know. In 1984.
It's just splattered willy-nilly.
Blood is meaningless to me.
Yeah, I know.
I'm a
like,
lawyer.
What does it mean, you know? That could be like, die. Hair, okay. November 4th, okay, so and then in 98, so that was 85, now we're in 98, and then Cindy Vanderheiden, she's 25 of the San Joaquin Valley, disappears from the Linden Bar Inn, which sounds like a fucking dive bar that you don't want to be in.
You mean if like in the inn, I-N-N, at the end of any bar, you don't go there.
Yeah.
No.
She had been seen talking to Lauren and Wesley, and actually Lauren had dated her older sister, so they knew each other, and supposedly they all left together. The three of them. Then her car is found by her dad the next day, like outside of local cemetery. And it's like a new car, and the dad was like, "What the fuck is her car doing there?" And like they panic, and it's really sad. Then she disappears, and then the cops are like, "Wait a second, Wesley has something to do with Cindy's disappearance." And they were like, 13 years later, earlier, this other one. They're like putting the pieces together. So they can't get his DNA, but they repossess his car when he doesn't pay the payments, and they fucking swab that shit.
All that meaningless DNA is suddenly relevant.
Suddenly it's 98, and people give a shit.
Hi.
Okay, can I tell you about his tattoos real quick?
Please.
Lauren had made and fueled by hate and restrained by reality.
Sorry, say it again.
Made and fueled by hate. And restrained by reality. But
he's already killed two people?
Yeah. So he's not being restrained by anything.
Sounds like our government.
Also,
that's why I whispered that.
I didn't hear what you said.
Oh, I said sounds like our government.
Oh, right.
Then I get shot. Send hate mail to Georgia at Georgia.
What were you gonna say? I just wondered what the picture underneath that phrase was, like a just like a fun, like a seal with a ball on its nose or something.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
Like a baby chick.
Just like the Notre Dame Irishman. Restrained by reality.
You know, it was a Tasmanian devil.
And he's wearing cut-off jeans.
Totally.
Yes. Just all mad.
He also had a tattoo on his right foot that said, "Made the devil do it."
Made the devil do it?
Yeah. No, I copied and pasted that. Made the devil do it.
His foot made the devil do something?
Apparently. The devil's like, dude, I'm good.
Don't involve me in your bullshit, the devil said.
I can do it without meth. And so... I don't even. This motherfucker is married with children, of course. And then he offers to give DNA once they like start looking into Wesley, his buddy Wesley. So the police pick him up. They're going to bring him to the station. And in the car on the way to the station, he starts fucking crying and asks what he can do to get out of this.
Wait, he may have been crying about those tattoos, though.
Fair enough. I don't even like the Tasmanian devil anymore.
I was made by hate. It feels bad to hate.
So he gets interrogated for 17 hours, confesses to the murder of Cindy. He says that they met her at a bar, they were going to go do drugs, that Wesley did everything, attempts to rape her, she resists, they pull over, bad things happen. And Lauren was like stabbing Cindy, or Lauren said that when Wesley was stabbing Cindy, he said, "Just let it come natural." I know. Karen. He told detectives that Wesley was responsible for at least 24 murders.
Holy shit.
He doesn't confess to anything himself, though, and just makes it seem like he's an accomplice. Of course.
Sure. You're just standing by.
Yeah, hanging out.
Murder again? I wanted to go to Dave and Buster's. God damn it.
He said we could go after, so I said, okay.
All right.
So next day, Wesley's arrested. Lauren keeps talking, tells him about the 84 killing spree that they just shot two fucking random dudes who were like hanging out outside their car. And he confesses to killing a man, a 41-year-old man named Henry Howell. He's at the side of his road with his broken car, and they just go up and shoot him. And it's in 1984 in Hope Valley. In 2000, 34-year-old Wesley goes on trial for 4 murders, but Lauren's confession of what happened, his 17-hour interrogation, is inadmissible because the tape couldn't be cross-examined.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The jury finds him guilty, though, of first-degree murder in all 4 cases. He's offered a deal to sentencing that the death penalty would be off the table if they told him where the bodies of Cindy and Chevy were, but he also wanted the $20,000 reward that had been offered for their whereabouts.
Sure. Absolutely.
He found them.
You should absolutely get $20,000 of the reward for finding you the murderer.
Right.
That is totally how it works.
Exactly.
Sounds like our government. Let's just keep doing it. Let's just keep doing it all night long.
It's fine. We're going to Vancouver tomorrow. We can just stay there if we need to. I forgot my passport.
That's right.
Yeah. It's being worked out. My husband is a dear, sweet angel who's FedExing things. Okay, the family, about the $20,000 reward, says, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
No.
Good.
They said, so he's sentenced to death. Then Lauren is tried for the murder of 5 people, including Cindy. His video is admissible now. He's found guilty of first degree in 3 killings, and he gets life without the possibility of parole. But wait, nope, it gets worse. In 2004, a state appeals court overturned Lauren's conviction, saying the police coerced his confession during the long interrogations. And they said that the police ignored his rights to remain silent, deprived him of all this shit. A new trial order, but Herzog's lawyer worked out a plea deal with the prosecutors.
Mm-hmm.
He agreed to plead guilty to manslaughter and accessory to murder in exchange for a 14-year sentence with credit for time served.
Oh.
So he's out on parole on September 18th, 2010.
Wait a second. It's 2017.
Yeah. he goes lives in like a shitty home. They keep an eye on him. He's got all this tracking device. But don't worry, you guys. He kills himself. Yay!
That's real applause.
So he basically, when he finds out that Wesley is going to tell them where the bodies are, he's like, oh shit, and kills himself. He is offered $33,000, Wesley is, by a bounty hunter to tell him where the bodies are.
Whoa.
I know. I think he tricked him, though. So let's see. He provides maps to 5 burial sites where his victims could be found, referring to one of them as their boneyard, and they find Cindy and Chevy's bodies. And there's 3 separate burial sites, and human remains are found there. At least 300 human bones of varying size, as well as coats, shoes, purses, and jewelry, from a well on the land in rural North California.
I thought you, for a second, I thought they fucking shipped some bones.
Go over here. They found other remains in a well, and so dental records identify Cindy and Chevy, and they find almost 1,000 human bone fragments in an old abandoned well, and including a woman named Joanne Hobson. She was 16 years old, went missing in 85, and Wesley claims that there are as many as 72 victims.
72? In that amount of time.
Can you believe, can you believe that, like, this, I didn't even hear about these dudes.
No, I've never heard of this.
I've seen their names, but actually when I was doing this research, I had to go through, there's no place that just explains what happened and like who disappeared. It's always like, there's an article about these 2 women who disappeared. There's an article about him killing himself. There's like little fragments, but there's
it's
nothing
not all
recent.
Underneath the one.
No, so I had to make it. Just like...
And maybe make up some facts, whatever.
I mean, I don't know, tattoos. You're not going to know if he has those tattoos or not. He's dead.
That's crazy. Well, yeah. That's because that's so many. That's,
I know.
That's
a. I mean, why would you make, I don't know. It's just this like, well, if it was from like 84 to 98, there's a lot of time in there.
Yes.
Well, they also believe that he's connected, they're connected.
Almost, almost 14 years. Is it 14?
I don't know. Yes. They also believe that they may be connected to the 88 disappearance of 9-year-old Michelle Garrick from Hayward. Do you remember that one? She was abducted on November 19th, 1988, in broad daylight outside a grocery store. She found her scooter. It had been moved next to a parked car, and she goes to get it. Some motherfucker grabs her and puts her in the car. And what's it called when they draw your face? Sketch. Thank you.
I thought you said, what's it called when they draw on your face? I'm like, falling asleep at a frat party? What the fuck is, what is this story?
Sketch of, yes.
Got it. Composite, so the other sketch.
Yes. It looks just fucking like Lauren. Like, it's just creepy. And so her case was the first missing child case to be featured on America's Most Wanted. So Wesley, one of the speed freak dudes, wrote a letter saying that Lauren committed, no, that's a copy and paste mistake, that he said that they should look into what happened to that Hayward girl, and they actually found shoes at the bottom of the well that looked like the ones she was wearing that day. I know, sweet baby. Okay, so Central Valley Department destroyed a bunch of missing person record, though, so we might not ever know that.
Wow.
What?
I just said wow.
Oh, I thought you said what?
Oh, no, sorry.
What?
I said wow too fast.
Yeah. Okay. And the other suspected victims that have been, that are, look like, is Terry Ann Forcher from Reno, Dina McCann. She was last seen getting gas near Lodi while 2 men were bothering her. And then Kimberly Ann Billy disappeared from Stockton, and Robin Armtrout, whose body was found stabbed to death and was last seen getting into a car with 2 men, and the car matched the description of Wesley's. So he's still on death row, and when he's like opening up a lot more now, and he said...
Good.
I know. He said,
doing some poetry and stuff, and like really accessing his feelings.
He's like doing the thing of like, oh yeah, I fucked up. Okay, I get it. My son won't talk to me anymore, so I know how these parents feel of losing their children. Not even fucking kidding you.
Well, I mean, look, I don't know. There's nothing to say about that.
I thought we were
going to
have some wisdom from you. Look, here's the thing.
Look, meth is bad.
Yeah. It really is. He says now, to think about all that stuff I did, I try not to. I would have nightmares.
Fuck you, pal.
Night, night, motherfucker.
Wow.
Speed freak killers.
The speed freak killers, everybody. Shit.
Yeah, that's your fucking doing, Northern California. You guys didn't do it.
Georgia, have you ever been blown away by the most simple dish at a restaurant, like perfectly scrambled eggs?
Oh my God, yes, Karen. And then all I want to do is make that dish at home and eat it every day.
Well, you probably could, as long as you have the chef's secret ingredient, Made In cookware.
Made In was created to bring restaurant quality performance kitchenware to home chefs around the world.
For years, they've built their business by supplying restaurants and top chefs with high-end cookware. Some of Tom Colicchio's most treasured dishes at his restaurant Kraft are made in Made In.
Whether you're cooking for professional critics or just the critics you live with, your meals will benefit from the quality of Made In products.
Like their carbon steel cookware, it combines the best of both cast iron and stainless steel clad, so it's rugged enough for grills or an open flame. It's the MVP of summer cookouts and cook-ins. What I really love about Made In cookware is that it actually makes something like having a Memorial Day barbecue much more convenient, because you can keep everything on the grill. If you need to throw, say, a pan of garlic up on the top while you're grilling your steaks on the bottom, it's strong enough, durable enough to do that.
If you want to take your cooking to the next level, remember what so many great dishes have in common. They're all Made In, Made In.
Save up to 25% this Memorial Day from May 18th through May 27th when you visit madeincookware.com.
That's M-A-D-E-I-N cookware.com.
Goodbye. All right, now I get comfy.
Oh, now you're going to dig in?
Yeah, let's
do it. Wow. Mine also did drugs. He did a lot of drugs. My guy, he doesn't really have a funny nickname like many of them do, although you've probably heard of him. His name is Herbert Mullen. And Herbert Mullen, thank you. Herbert Mullen is a serial killer from, Fenton, California, near Santa Cruz. And represent, go banana slugs.
Is that a thing?
Yeah, this UC Santa Cruz mascot is a banana
slug. No.
Yes.
She fucking with me? Really?
The children, they got to vote on their own mascot.
No.
And because irony is fun, they chose a banana slug.
No. Never let children choose anything important. When I was in soccer, we were the teal tornado. Like, you just get to pick your own stupid things, and kids are dumb, you know? And they're like,
well, I mean, it is college.
Oh, Jesus Christ. That's even worse. Wow, really?
Yeah,
I'm disappointed.
They love pot. So, who doesn't? So, Herbert Mullen was the guy, you may have heard of him. It happened in the 70s. He was the one that was active at the same time as Edmund Kemper, the co-ed killer, who was also in Santa Cruz. So, Santa Cruz in the early 70s had two full-on serial killers at the same time, earning it the nickname Murderville USA.
No.
Yeah. Our own little Santa Cruz.
Work, live, play. Murderville, you?
Murder, hide, bum out. But unlike Edmund Kemper, Herbert Mullen was killing for our benefit. He believed that he had to make human sacrifices so that earthquakes wouldn't hit California.
Did anyone ever tell him that earthquakes are kind of fun, though?
No, he's clearly very scared of earthquakes.
Idiot.
He didn't want them to happen, and... Let me tell you about him. I'll tell you a little bit about him. So he was born on April 18th, 1947, to a very strict Catholic family. He was in high school. He was good-looking, athletic, and polite. The trifecta.
No.
Be careful. I'm telling you, it is not good to peak in high school. Mm-mm.
Psychotic or charming?
Yeah.
Somewhere in between is what you want.
If you're hiding behind those beautiful teeth, good luck.
Yeah.
He was actually voted most likely to succeed.
And he did, I guess. Yeah.
And it's some saw it as a success. After graduating in 1965, he went to college. He majored in engineering, and he considered following in his father's footsteps of joining in the military. But the turning point of his otherwise normal life came around the time when his best friend was killed in a car accident.
Fuck.
And this was the first moment where a psychotic episode was triggered. So he was right at the age where schizophrenia starts to show in young men. And basically it was the stress and the grief. He had this psychotic episode and his behavior began to change entirely. And his family started to get really scared of him. So his friend died. He built a shrine in his room to his friend. He started arranging all the furniture in his room around this shrine, and he was sitting it for hours and hours alone. He had to break up with his girlfriend, explaining to her that he thought he was turning gay because of the shrine.
Now how you just turn into a gay,
just
know?
Slowly turning. Yeah. He was going to let her know when he turned entirely. But he didn't feel comfortable leading her on. I'm lying about all that part. He became obsessed with the concept of reincarnation, and he became increasingly paranoid, and he started hearing voices. So his behavior was really scaring his family because he was starting to do super weird things like beg his sister for sex.
What?
So gay. Such a gay move. And he also was doing a thing that he began to compulsively imitate every movement his brother-in-law made.
Oh, God. So
his sister was also married. So it was sinful in many ways that he was begging her for sex.
The movement was sex.
Yeah.
Is that the move?
No. Just every movement. So this is actually a real disorder called echopraxia.
Really?
Yes. There's echopraxia is when you have the compulsion to imitate every single thing a person does.
Like even if you don't even want to, you just have to keep doing it.
It's a compulsion. And echolalia is the compulsion to repeat anything someone says.
Well, what's the compulsion to want to screw your sister? Gross.
I guess that's called Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
What? Thank you. All the way up in the back.
Fucking pro over here, you guys.
Okay, so in the early 70s, in an attempt to calm himself, he began to take huge doses of LSD.
Oh.
What?
Fuck.
A perfect solution. He also was taking a lot of amphetamines.
No!
Yeah, just a little bit to bring him up after he went into that other dimension.
That sounds like a... No.
For a little energy. I'm not a doctor, but... if you're feeling paranoid, think you're seeing things, acid isn't the way.
No.
It's just not... It's a non-solution.
And if you're paranoid and think you're seeing things because you're on acid... Meth isn't the way.
Yeah, that's right. Let's not don't double down.
No.
Yeah, don't go into the white drug area.
Like, pick a drug. No, don't do drugs, you guys.
Don't do drugs.
But if you're
gonna,
you know,
listen.
You guys, you know. Ow.
You know.
You know. Just hit myself in the face with the mic. What's up? You missed it. I wanted to tell you.
I wrote here. Maybe try some aromatic oils.
Don't you love yourself at that moment?
Writing is fun. I was having a great time drinking this huge thing of coffee. I was enjoying myself. So Herbert came to believe that his friend's death had been a part of a grand cosmic plan, and he changed his college major from engineering to philosophy. He became obsessed with reincarnation, religion, and, take note, impending natural disasters.
Uh-oh.
So... In 1969, he was finally diagnosed with severe paranoid schizophrenia, and he allowed his family to commit him to Mendocino State Hospital, one of the many state hospitals that doesn't exist anymore because they cut the funding for mental health, which is fucked. Let's see what we can do
government.
To fix that, America.
Is your mom work? Did your mom work there?
Mendocino's way up north, but okay. She did work in a state hospital, yeah.
You can't let a city go by, can you?
Well, it's all of California has come to see us tonight. I'm so excited.
I don't know a single person here. No. There's nobody on my... No, there was. Okay,
you don't know. What if you find out that you do? Okay, so Herbert spent the following years... He went to Mendocino State Hospital. I preach. And then the back half of that was he checked himself out 6 weeks later. So then he spent the following years drifting around Northern California, working small-time jobs, spending short periods of time in various mental institutions. He practiced yoga, meditation, ate a macrobiotic diet, yet he was vocally ultra-conservative.
And essential oils, probably?
And maybe he was using some essential oils, which was my idea. He spent time as an amateur boxer.
Some brain injury right there.
Yeah, that's tough. He actually had to be forcibly removed from the ring when he wouldn't stop beating his opponent.
Oh.
Hey, you're an amateur. You don't have to kill that guy. At one point, he attempted to join the priesthood. And they were like, no thanks. Which is really saying something. All right. So, in this time, Herbert is fixating on impending natural disasters, of course also doing tons of acid, and he comes up with a theory. He becomes convinced that nature requires a blood sacrifice to keep the next big earthquake from hitting California. He theorized that the violence during the Vietnam War had been enough bloodshed to control earthquakes throughout the late 60s, but now that the war was over, there was nothing to stop the big one from destroying the state.
How does he know the percentage of blood to like the percentage of year, like the number of years? You know what I mean? Because he was an engineer.
No, I know. He's like a typical like, oh, actually, it's this much blood. Like, of course.
This is how many people were killed in Vietnam, and then you calculate that.
No, Herbert. Herbert believed that because his birthday was April 18th, same day as the 1906 earthquake that leveled San Francisco and the death day of Albert Einstein, that this made him the leader of his generation.
That's all you need is
that's right.
Fucking a birthday.
One good birthday. And as the leader, it was his job to make sure enough people die to prevent the big one from killing everyone. So he had to begin murdering people for the good of mankind. Before that, and I swear to God, this is a classic cut and paste. Before that, he had considered relocating to Canada. Wish you'd done that.
Then you'd have your murder for tomorrow.
That's right.
Something else tonight.
I'd just do Herbert Mullen up there. So it turns out Herbert Mullen hates maple syrup. All right. So it starts on October 13th, 1972. Herbert Mullen is 24 years old. He drives home to visit his parents. Oh, in Felton, California. Sorry, not Fenton. I said Fenton. It's Felton. My apologies to the mayor and the comptroller. So, if you don't know, Felton is this tiny town. It's north of Santa Cruz on the 9. It's right in those, like, right? Give it up for the 9, everybody. One of the better small highways of California. There's redwoods everywhere. It's actually gorgeous.
Okay.
It's so gorgeous.
Perfect place to put a body, I bet.
That's right. It's also where I went to camp.
Oh, my God.
So... yeah,
perfect
Camp St. Andrews.
Children's live bodies at a camp.
I mean, wait for it. Okay so as he's driving down, he's going back to visit his parents, and he later tells police that this is when he received a telepathic message from his father saying, Herb, I want you to kill me somebody. So you don't listen to your parents all your life, and this is when you're gonna fucking start listening to your... Come on, Herb.
Dad's drinking a ham's beer at home, and like, well, I don't fucking...
I didn't do it.
Yeah.
Don't bring me into this shit. Okay. So, Herbert Mullen's seat, as he's driving on the 9, he sees a homeless man named Lawrence White who is on the side of the road. So what he does is he pulls over and he lifts the hood of his car, feigning car trouble. And when the man comes over to ask if he needs any help, Herbert Mullen bludgeons him to death with a baseball bat and leaves his body where it lays. And that man is found a few days later.
Days?
A few days later.
On the side of the road?
Yeah, because it's like way up in forest land. Yeah,
fuck.
It's remote.
Ooh.
So less than 2 weeks later, it gets worse. Should I sing the song? It gets so much worse. And it really, no, thank you. Thank you. But it really does. So 2 weeks later, Herbert picked up a hitchhiker named Mary Guilfoyle, who was a student at UC Santa Cruz. Don't cheer for it. Listen to this.
Slugs.
He stabbed her in the heart in his car. Then he brought her body into the woods.
No.
Near the roadside. He cut her open. He hanged her intestines from tree branches. And he examined them for pollution. Yes.
For fuck's sake.
Her remains weren't found for several months.
Oh.
And when they were discovered, the police assumed that this murder was the work of Edmund Kemper.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they weren't like, oh, it could be another fucking serial killer in Santa Cruz.
You know, that other one.
Yeah. Why don't you guys just go on that roller coaster down by the sea and relax? All right. So Mary Guilfoyle's murder haunted Mullins, so to the point where on November 2nd, All Souls Day, he walked into Los Gatos Catholic Church. He took confession with Father Henry Thompson, and he confessed everything.
No.
He talked about these murders in detail, but then when he was done, a voice told him that this priest was offering himself up as a sacrifice. How many times do I have to warn you? So, Mullen stabbed Father Thompson to death in the confessional and then walked out of the church.
But then how do we know that he said all that to him?
Sorry?
How do we know that he confessed all that to him then?
He told the police everything.
Oh, I get the other one. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. he proudly told his own story at the end of this insanity.
Okay.
So, he tries to enlist in the Marine Corps. A natural next step. And though he did pass both the physical and psychiatric exams.
What?
Yeah. He was rejected when they brought up his arrest record and saw his history of bizarre behavior.
Mm. Also, he was colorblind. but otherwise, you're fine.
And that's fine. What? Flat feet. Get out of here. He later claimed that he never would have become a serial killer if he had just been accepted into the Marines.
You've already killed 3 fucking people, dude.
It's kind of a fake excuse. You have to admit.
Maybe.
So this rejection affects him a lot to the point where he stops taking massive amounts of acid every day. Severe, violent, paranoid schizophrenia is out of control, totally untreated. He believes that this rejection from the Marines is just another example of the conspiracy against him in his life. Mm-hmm. He also accuses his parents of participating in this conspiracy. He accuses them of being, quote, killjoy reincarnationalists, which is not a real thing. Who believed their next lives would be more enjoyable if they made the current lives of others miserable.
Oh, man, can you imagine just being a parent? You're like, I want to have babies. I do too. I love you. And then you just have this fucking asshole.
Yeah. You just birth an asshole out onto the fucking table.
Man.
Tough. But also, it's kind of funny because then I just think of like when you're 13, it's just kind of just a teenage mentality of like, my parents live to make everyone else's lives awful.
They're reincarnationists, damn it. Mm-hmm.
Fucking reincarnationalists. All right. So, swept up in his paranoid delusions, Mullen decides to kill Jim Gennara, his high school pot dealer.
Oh. That's a weird choice.
It doesn't work that way, Herbert. He believes that because Jim sold him pot, that he was part of the plot to destroy his mind and that he had to avenge himself.
The guy's like, I fucking sold you oregano, dude. Like,
yeah.
Damn it. That was
also,
a pot.
Why isn't it ever your fault, Herb? Yeah. Why isn't it on you ever? All right. So around the same time, a voice told Mullen to buy a gun because it would be a cleaner way of killing people.
I mean, I guess if you're going to go, like, never mind. I'm not going to.
Do it! On January 25th, 1973, Herbert Mullen drove to Jim Gennaro's house, or where Jim Gennaro lived when they were in high school.
No.
When he got there, he met current resident Kathy Francis. And she explained that Gennaro didn't live there anymore. Herbert explained that he was a friend of Jim's, and so Kathy gave Mullen Jim's new address. That night, Mullen drove to the Gennaro's new home and shot and killed Jim Gennaro and his wife, Joan, and then stabbed them both repeatedly post-mortem.
Oh, no.
Yeah. He then went back and murdered Kathy Francis.
No! I thought she got away.
And her two young sons.
No! Fuck, man.
Guys, it's in the name. My favorite murder. You know what I mean?
Oh, man.
Because both Jim Gennaro and Kathy Francis' husband had dealt drugs at one time, the police assumed that both of the murders, being same MO, had to be drug-related.
Please.
Less than 2 weeks later, Mullen saw four teenage boys camping in Henry Cowell Redwood State Park.
You've been there?
Oh, yeah. In fact, I didn't have time to look it up, but that might be where we went to camp. I'm not kidding.
Are you serious?
Well, there's a bunch of state parks, but I would like it to be. These boys were David Oliker, 18, Robert Spector, 18, Brian Card, 19, and Mark Drabel Biss, 15. Mullins approached them, posing as a park ranger, and told them to leave, claiming that they were polluting the park.
Uh-oh. There's that word again.
Fucking hippies. When the boys dismissed him, he pulled the gun, shot them all one by one. He stole a rifle from that campsite, and then he left. Herbert Mullen's final murder took place on February 13th, 1973.
Holy fuck.
73-year-old Fred Perez was gardening in his front yard. Mullen drove by and shot him with the rifle that he stole from that campsite. Luckily, a neighbor witnessed the whole thing, wrote down Mullen's license plate number, called the police, and Herbert Mullen was arrested shortly thereafter with no incident. It is a nice feeling, isn't it? Yeah. They got him. And he was arrested without incident. He was just like, yep, all right, we're done here.
Wow.
But then they get to the police station. This is kind of my favorite part.
Okay.
They get to the police station, and Mullen was totally uncooperative. His response to every question the police asked was, silence!
Oh.
Which you have to admit would be kind of fun if you got arrested.
Yeah.
And the police were like, where were you on that? Silence!
I'm going to try it next time I get arrested, I think.
Or really anytime.
I mean.
You're welcome,
yeah,
too.
Thank you.
When Edmund Kemper, the co-ed killer, was arrested, he and Mullen were briefly held in adjoining cells. Santa Cruz.
Besties.
Santa Cruz, best friends, killing all around the forest.
You think they'd be playing Blood Brothers through the...
The fake, yeah. Keep it up. Keep it up, you fucking psycho. Kemper actually accused Mullen of stealing his dump sites, which is... Hey, Ed,
I didn't know that you
Ed, could... relax. It's, I mean... He didn't even use dump sites, you fucking idiot.
There's enough for everyone.
Eventually, Herbert Mullen confessed to all 13 murders, explaining to police that these human sacrifices were necessary for earthquake prevention.
Ow.
Only you can prevent forest fires, he said to the police. And then he yelled, silence!
Is that how they came up with the only you can prevent forest fires?
Forest fires.
Like, oh, did you know that was...
He looked a little bit like a bear.
Aww.
And they were like, hold on.
And he was naked from the waist down with a hat on.
really deep voice. He also claimed that he had telepathically asked those four boys at the campsite if he could kill them and that they'd all given him permission.
At least two of them would have been like, fuck no, you know?
Yeah, that's when the police began to beat him senseless.
Really?
It's not on the internet anywhere, but we can pretty much be assured.
Okay.
In the end, Mullen was found guilty of two counts of first-degree murder because they proved that Kathy Francis and Jim Gennaro's murders were premeditated, mm-hmm. but everything else, they could not prove that, also because he was so insane. So he had 8 counts of second-degree murder.
Fuck!
He was sentenced to life in prison. He will be eligible for parole in 2021 when he is 74 years old.
No.
I doubt it'll work out.
Probably not. But, you know.
Yeah, that's it. That's all. Pretty good, right?
Listen, don't go off your meds, everyone.
No.
I don't care what the fucking specter of your dad is telling you.
Yeah.
Don't go off your meds.
Yeah. If you hear voices, and I mean, like, even if there's someone standing behind you in line talking, get on those meds.
Yep, I agree.
Fuck.
I agree.
I think we have time to do a hometown murder.
I think so, too.
Now, here's the cool part. We know who we're going to pick.
Yeah.
Because her name is Chloe.
Yeah.
Chloe? Where are you?
No? Oh, she was fucking lying. She was fucking with us.
Is there any way to bring these lights up a little bit? Chloe, you said you were going to be at the back of the orchestra pit.
That's what this is, I think, right? I hear her. There she comes.
Chloe, do you know what an orchestra pit is? Because if you're yelling from anywhere that's not here.
Did we forget to tell them that we're going to have someone from the audience?
Chloe, you're from Oakland.
There she is.
There she is.
Did she have a mic?
Can you, yeah, go over there. Look over there. Look at that girl in the plaid shirt. Chloe,
turn
listen
around.
To my voice. See that girl that's waving her arms? Go to her. Jesus
oh, no.
Christ. We rehearsed this 15 times.
Oh, that poor baby. If she wasn't nervous before,
I know. Like, now we really built it up. Now I'm mad at her. Get out here, God damn it. These people are waiting. So am I.
Hi, you look so
that's
cute.
Georgia. That's
you.
Georgia. That's Chloe.
I love you so much.
Are you really Chloe?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Chloe tweeted at us.
It's
right?
Fine.
I just signed up for Twitter yesterday.
Oh my God. Let's get her some followers. What's your handle? What's your handle? We'll get
Chloe.
You some followers.
It's Chloe Doors. That's my name.
D-O-O-R-S?
R-E-S.
Oh.
That's adorable.
There's a couple.
Holy there she goes. She's going to have at least 2,000 followers by tomorrow.
Here, so let's center up. Let's center up, Chloe.
None of this is real, so don't
let's
worry.
Get a nice stage picture.
Thank
Chloe, you
God,
be in the middle.
I can't see any of you.
Yeah
I know,
fine.
Right?
Just don't look at them. Okay. You have a hometown murder for us.
I wrote it down.
You really?
yeah. I can't do this.
Okay, all right.
I got it.
I have to read it.
All right. I mean, we wish you would have memorized it. That's what we do.
Just wing it. Yeah.
I'd like to pull a Van Morrison and just face the back of the stage
do
right
it.
Now.
That's badass. Yes. Radio. Here we go.
Stare at my back while I tell you this.
We can all do it. We can all.
Okay, right. Wait. Let's really quick.
Okay.
Where are you from?
I am from Fairfax.
They love Fairfax.
Yay! Yeah.
Tiny town in Marin, not far from Petaluma.
That's
who
right.
Who are you here with?
This is why I tweeted you avidly.
Okay.
Fairfax. Anyway.
Who are you here with?
I'm here with my husband.
Ah!
Hi.
Luke and my good friend Katie. I can't see you guys. I'm pointing.
Yeah,
like I can
just
see
point.
You.
It's fine.
See you guys tomorrow. I'm going to hang out with Karen and Georgia tonight.
No,
cake.
She's not.
We all get cake.
Oh, I am.
Okay, so let's hear this hometown story. Is this a Fairfax murder?
No, it's very close. Tara Linda.
Okay.
It's Tara Linda.
Yes.
super creepy. This is called The Barbecue Murders. I'm not fucking with you. I wrote it down. I'm terrified right now.
Just read it.
Terra Linda is like a weird suburban colony of San Rafael. It's not a town. It's where the mall is. It's where you go to the mall.
That's right.
It's eerie. It's super weird there. So I'm just going to read because I will start talking and barfing all over you guys.
It'd be kind of cool.
That's what our podcast motto is.
We're super punk rock like that.
I was born in 1982. So
it's clearly, this is not about you. So
it was a rainy day in October. Let's just start there. There's this thing about Terra Linda. It just feels like it was stuck in the 80s. It's like you go there to go to the mall, and it's the 80s, and it's creepy.
And there's a Kaiser up on the hill.
There's a Kaiser and a mall. That's all that there is there. Yeah. And a bunch of tract housing and like a Sizzler.
Yeah. I used to get my allergy shots at that Kaiser 3 times a week.
Did you really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Girl. Anyway, this really horrible double murder happened there in 1975.
Okay.
Here come my notes.
Let's hear them.
By a 16-year-old girl named Marlene Olive and her fucking loser boyfriend named Chuck.
Chuck.
He was 20. She was 16 and he was 20. It was the 70s.
Every 20-year-old in the 70s was named Chuck.
And a dating a 16-year-old.
Yeah. This is the guy that sold drugs to the high school kids. Not for money, but to be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And remember we were
is
like,
that a fact or are you just theorizing?
No, I got that off Wikipedia.
Okay,
you know.
Okay.
Girl, you know.
Okay.
Anyway, they started dating, and Marlene was really troubled, and she was adopted, and she found out when she was really young that she was adopted on accident, so she was all kinds of fucked up. And
she wasn't adopted on accident. She was adopted, and she found out
Thank
on
you.
Accident.
Thank you. She found out on accident.
I heard some gasps, like, what the fuck?
Oh, whoops. We have a kid now.
Now we have to keep her.
Oh, we brought the wrong luggage at the airport. Oh, well.
Oh, wow.
She had a great relationship with her adoptive father, but her adoptive mother was a schizophrenic alcoholic who was psychotic and was really mean to her and basically told her that her birth mom was a prostitute and that she was going to be one too. And all the stuff that makes you fucked up.
I mean,
yes. And then young Marlene yelled back, sex worker.
Exactly. Exactly.
It was the 70s.
It was the 70s. And needless to say, it was the 70s. Marlene got super into the occult.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's not real.
And doing lots of drugs. And she hated her mom, obviously, because she was crazy and super mean. And she decided that her parents had to die. Mm. And she also decided that her loser boyfriend had to be the one to kill them.
Mm. Oh, that's a good call, actually. Keep your hands clean, Marlene. Right?
I mean,
you gotta be
16.
And
not so dumb. Anyway, she had all the control in the relationship, obviously, because he agreed to do it. So one day she leaves the house with her dad, and Chuck sneaks in and kills Naomi, her mom, with a hammer and a knife and some other stuff. Ooh. And then Marlene's dad, Jim, comes home, finds Chuck, and Chuck shoots him as well. So both parents are dead.
Oh, no.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah. And that's the end of it?
Yeah. So Chuck and Marlene clean up the place and take the bodies to this beautiful state park in San Rafael called China Camp.
China Camp, yeah. I've had a Mickey's Big Mouth or two there myself.
Oh my God. Like, gorgeous, gorgeous. Yeah. I can't go there ever again.
Yeah.
And also, just FYI, the barbecue pit that they set the parents on fire in has been removed, so don't try to find it.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
You're like, why does this burger taste so good?
Hence the barbecue. Yeah.
So I'm a vegan.
Set mom and dad on fire, went home kind of right after they did that, because
like
logic.
Left them burning?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah. And then they went to go live in the Olive's home for about 3 days.
Wow.
The plan was to wait until the parents were pronounced dead and they collected the life insurance, and then they could go move to Ecuador.
Yeah, it's as simple as that.
Live their lives.
I can't imagine that plan didn't involve a joint at some point.
Apparently, they went to a Yes concert.
Oh, my God. Do not blame this on Yes.
During that time.
Do not blame the... I don't even care. I don't even...
There. Anyway, they were caught, of course, because they're idiots. He's in prison for life. She went to some juvenile something. She was 15 or 16. She was released after 2 years, moved to L.A., became some superstar in the, forgery. She did a lot of forgery.
Oh, yeah.
And you now know her as Gwyneth Paltrow.
I thought that's where you were going. She's a superstar.
Don't say anything.
The similarities are uncanny. Yeah. Uncanny.
We all have pasts.
Exactly. I quickly have two connections to this murder, besides just being a super weird kid and totally obsessed with this at the age of 10. I made my mom drive me to the house that it happened in. So I got
that's
when
so
you
cute.
Were 10?
Yes. And your mom did it.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
She was, like, secretly, I think, kind of into it, even though she was like, this is weird.
If I had a 10-year-old, like,
everyone says that.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
She was weird. She was into it. We drove by. but the really creepy thing is that when I was 13, I started babysitting for a family about a block away from that house, and it's all tract housing there. So all the houses are the same. In the best-selling true crime book by Richard Levine about this story called Bad Blood, a Marin County family murder.
Oh, so there's a colon at the end of blood.
Yeah.
Okay.
He draws a layout of the home where both of these parents were murdered, and it's exactly the same as the house that I used to babysit in.
Ooh.
And I just remember being 13 and, like, putting these kids down and walking around and being like,
this is where this happened.
I'm scintillated and excited and terrified. Pretty much everything I'm feeling right now.
Yes.
I'm done. That's it.
Chloe! Chloe, everybody! Nice! Beautifully done.
Beautifully done.
So good.
Yeah.
Really good. From a tweet. We trusted the tweet. Chloe! I mean...
Did you just tell her to go away?
What's that?
Nothing.
That was magical.
Yeah. I love when that happens and it's not like some weird person.
I know. It never is.
No. I mean, we've done it twice. So
yeah, it's true. That is true. I just like that. What if we didn't, if we were just like, forget it, we're not going to do that. And then she would have that little folded up piece of paper in her pocket.
Oh.
But that's not what happened, everybody.
It's someone else now. Oh, really? Steven offered to drive up from Los Angeles to bring my passport.
Oh, my. Okay. I got to tell you what. Ever since Steven has been promoted from just, like, the guy that records our podcast so we don't have to, like, move the dials and stuff, we were like, Steven, you please help us with these emails? And he's like, okay, I totally will. He's completely organized all of our hometown murder emails. But now he's turned into, like, the super assistant where, like, like, what did he say? He was like...
He said, were you my text today?
Yes.
He was like, hey, I just want to let you know you're on your way to a hotel, and they have a printer, so if you need to print out your story, that it's there. And I'm like, I know how fucking hotels work, Steven.
He's like calling hotels. Yes, I need to speak to the business center, please.
Do you have paper? She likes this kind of grain.
Don't look her in the eye when she goes into the business center.
Actually didn't print it up there, and I was going to send it to them, but it said Speed Freak Killers, the name of the documents. So I was like, I'm going to print it at the venue.
Just a little paperwork for my job.
Yeah. So, yes, hi to Stephen Ray Morris for being an angel, baby.
Stephen Ray Morris.
Yeah.
You know who else is the best?
Who?
The Fox Theater in Oakland, California. Thank you guys so much. Thank you all so much.
Thank
this is amazing. We love you for coming here.
Thank you.
We love you for getting tickets and
amazing.
Fucking being a part of our world.
First night of our tour.
You are there. First night. You know what? Stay sexy.
And don't get